Crooks and criminals in America's farm country are turning to an old crime, cattle rustling. While it sounds something like what we might see in an old Western movie, today's cattle thieves and fraudsters rely on fast transportation and the internet to aid in their crimes. Welcome to the Beef Roundtable. I'm Dr. Ron Lemonager, Beef Extension Specialist at Purdue University, West Lafayette, Indiana.
And I'm Bert Rutherford, Senior Editor with Beef Magazine. I'm based in Denver. Each month on the Beef Roundtable, we discuss timely topics that impact you as a cattle producer. This go-around, we're going to talk about a very important topic, and that's how to protect your herd from cattle theft and fraud.
The Beef Roundtable is recorded live and edited to fit the time constraints of the program. The programs are available at the Beef Magazine website, iTunes, YouTube.com, as well as BeefRoundtable.com.
Our first guest today is Scott Williamson. Scott is a special ranger and a regional supervisor for the Texas and Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association. Scott spent 8 years as a brand inspector and a deputy sheriff, and the past 22 years as a special ranger for TSCRA. In that role, Scott investigates all agricultural criminal activity. Scott's commissioned by the Texas Department of Public Safety and the Oklahoma Bureau of Investigation as a ranger. He's also a certified peace officer instructor in both Texas and Oklahoma.
Our second guest is Cody James, Director of the Animal Industry Division and Chief of the Livestock Inspection Bureau for the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food. Cody is law enforcement certified and applies law enforcement expertise in the livestock inspection program to deter livestock theft. Cody instituted an increased presence and awareness of brand inspectors statewide using a combination of easily identified vehicles, extra patrols in the backcountry, and community outreach that has resulted in a significant drop in the number of missing or stolen livestock. Since 2013, Utah has experienced a 60% decrease in the number of stolen livestock reports.
Gentlemen, welcome to the Beef Roundtable. I suppose the first thing that one thinks about when discussing this topic is, who is at greatest risk? And how can I manage the risk of some scofflaw coming in and stealing my cattle?
I'll go ahead and start there. In Utah, based on that we have such an open range of where most of our livestock are kept and fed during the year, with the majority of the state being public land, usually the people that are at risk are those folks that are sending those cattle out onto the BLM lands or to Forest Service and not necessarily checking on them quite as regularly as we'd like to. And so that gives thieves quite a lot of time to be able to go out there and actually take some of them calves, usually slick calves, for their own purposes.
Texas is a little bit different, as we don't have the public lands to deal with that Cody does. Most of ours are private. So our highest risk tends to be the non-resident producer or the producer who is spread out over multiple counties and is maybe not as regularly in their stock or paying attention to locks, gates, and such.
Do people who are going to steal cattle, is that more of a crime of convenience where they just happen to be there and do it, or do they plot it, plan it, scope it out, track movements of owners and cowboys and things like that?
They have more thought process into it, although it is not uncommon for them to be in the middle of doing something else. Narcotics plays a big part in the theft in our area of Texas, but since you have a need of where you're going to go with the cattle, having a vehicle, a trailer, the opportunity, are there pens there? Do you need a cow, cowboy, a horse, or can you feed the cattle into the pens to take the cattle? It does take a little more thought process than the person just breaking in a door and picking up a saddle.
I would agree with Scott. I think that it is a wide range of opportunity. Those that are on a bit larger scale obviously have a lot of thought, probably a lot of help in what they're doing. What we've noticed is that if you compare it to life in the city, you've got kids in the city that know how to steal cars or know how to steal radios from cars, things like that. Kids that were raised out in the country, they've worked cattle and other livestock. They know how to handle that stuff. So sometimes it may just be convenience for them and a way to make a quick dollar. Other times it's going to take a lot of planning, and they're going to have a group that goes out and do it. And it takes them a long time, but they get to be really good at it sometimes.
So do you see the occurrence of cattle theft follow any trends like season of the year or market conditions or status of the local economy? Or, you know, you mentioned narcotics kind of playing into this thing. So any kind of trends that you see here?
For our area, the trends tend to be summer months, one, because the weather's nicer. Bottom line is that people are too lazy to work or also don't like being out in bad weather. But the fall and the spring of the year, when people have a lot of animals in transition, they're usually up closer to holding pens instead of the larger pastures. They may have weaned a set of calves and they leave them in a set of pens that happen to be near a road or in view of a road to wean for several days. So you have a much more convenient circumstance for that theft to occur, and those tend to be a little higher areas.
Yeah, in Utah and out west where we're having more severe winters, the time for theft actually is again during the summer months and fall where it's warmer, but the cattle are again out on those in those pastures and out on grazing permits. During the winter in these mountain states and in the northwest here, we have to feed them during the winter. So we've got a close proximity to our livestock at that time. And so it takes a lot more work and someone's usually watching over them. To go back to what we mentioned a little bit earlier about the work there, again, as Scott said, it's a little bit warmer there. And these guys that are stealing aren't there's happy to go work when it's cold. So that plays into it as well. But also, you're always going to see the higher the price on things, the more people are going to go after it. I think we saw a rise in livestock in the nation a couple of years ago when beef was at record highs.
Okay, so go ahead, Scott.
I would agree with that. That the market does play a part, although it is still those people don't know what the market is as a whole. They hear on the radio that it is up, so they may be more likely. But as a whole, I don't think the market is a huge indicator.
Local economy, does that have anything to do with it? I mean, where people are really struggling, you know, maybe make ends meet, or do you see it go up whenever the local economy is poor?
In Utah, we see that quite, but that's actually one of our largest problems is, and what really a way that we've been able to catch the majority of the people that we have. We don't usually have a huge amount of large herds go missing, although it happens from time to time. We usually have a one or a two head go missing. And what we've found is that's exactly what it is. They've gone out and wrangled a couple of head and taken them home for butchering. There was an instance where our investigator actually had been driving down the road and saw that there was some sagebrush being dragged from a pasture. And he just followed the sagebrush all the way to this person's house and found them starting to hang one up in their garage there. And so we have that quite a bit here, especially with some of the smaller communities and some of the groups that come to work in on some of our different areas, that we're seeing that a little bit.
I would agree as well. And an indicator here is our oil prices. As the oil fell the last few years and they cut so many oil field jobs, that increased our theft, not only of livestock, but of all property ag-related.
Okay, so I head out to the pasture and something just doesn't look right, doesn't feel right. Maybe there's a few head missing or the horses aren't where they normally are, a lock is cut. What do I do first?
The first thing we would ask is that you call your local law enforcement and the TSCRA Special Ranger for this area before you go in and begin to dig around to ensure that no evidence is destroyed, footprints, tire tracks, anything else, possibly some fingerprints if it's a door or a barn door that could be involved.
And I would agree with Scott on that. If you're seeing a lock cut or something that's that out of place where you can almost tell for sure that there someone had been there and tampered or something, to call local law enforcement to get them out there and start looking for evidence. As Scott mentioned, we don't want anybody to go out there and not necessarily hinder, but hurt our chance of finding any evidence that could lead us to the person or the people who've done that, actually get us, allowing us to get their cattle back. So the first thing we'd always ask, if you know for sure that's the situation, is to go ahead and call local law enforcement.
So what kind of recovery rate are we talking about? And there may be several tiers, there may be several categories, but can you give me some idea of, you know, if, when those phone calls come in, you know, how many of them end up with some resolution?
Out here, and again, it goes back to what I've talked about several times, is the amount of open space that we've have our livestock out on. Our recovery rate is actually fairly low. I think at best we're 30% here in the state of Utah. And that's why we've had to really make a change and do a proactive approach to how we handle things over here, because it is such a tough thing to be able to track where those cattle, especially if they're slick calves. And you can't find exactly where they're at. It's so easy to move those with the internet these days, with a lot of folks willing to kind of work underneath the radar. Our recovery rate at the best is about 30%. That's if they're branded. Usually if it's a group of people that are known and they've already been seen out there, we actually have a place to go. Other than that, it gets really tough for us to be able to track those cattle back, or any livestock for that matter. But, you know, one of the things that helps us immensely is social media as well. I mean, it works both ways. It's given these thieves a way to sell and to trade and things like that. But it's also given us a way to have, we've got millions and millions of sets of eyes within this state and then throughout the United States that will be looking for this stuff. And that's helped, I think, has actually probably increased our ability to get some of those back. But again, in these open range states, it's pretty tough to do that.
I would concur with that, and as well, your statement, there are different tiers. I don't know that we have a set number, but of cattle that are branded, where we have evidence and a time frame to work with, and we could be as much as 60 or 70% on crimes where it's just a matter of a report of missing cattle that could be for months at a time, or even a year sometimes, that we will get a report that there's no definite time frame with. Those you're maybe 10, 15, 20%. The time frame is critical, and the brand and the information on those are critical.
Besides branding, are there other ways that you can identify your livestock that would help you guys in the investigation?
Branding is primary. You know, they're talking about RFID, and people use ear tags. Chipping isn't used because of the security of the meat, of the ability of that chip to move within that animal to some extent. But those tags can all be removed either by a suspect, or they may just be removed by nature itself with fences and brush. So brand is absolutely the best permanent ID for us to be able to make a criminal case.
I would agree with what Scott says there. Brand by far is the best way. It's just about the only thing that is impossible to remove, although they can do some things to it. But anything that they would do to a brand would cause us to take a harder look at that animal to verify the ownership of it. I do know also, by hanging out with Scott over the past couple of years, that all his group, as well as ours and every other state probably in the nation, are looking for ways that help us out. You know, there's we've talked to several individuals and companies that are trying to come up with tags or other ways to be electronic that we could track some things like that. None of them are going to be as foolproof as the brands, but we're always trying to look into the future, as Scott mentioned, RFID tags and things like that. If we could find something that would stay on the animals, which is unnoticeable really by thieves, so that they're not going to be the first thing to remove that. They're not going to remove that right as they get those animals. That we're always be anything that helps, we'd be on the lookout for. But again, like Scott said, brands are the A1 number thing or number one thing that we use.
So while cattle theft is probably the most obvious invisible part of your job, do you also get involved with cattle being sold while being held under things like a lien? Okay, so do you get involved with the banking system and attorneys and district attorneys and prosecuting attorneys and those kinds of things?
Absolutely. Yeah. And for the special rangers in Texas, we differ a little bit from the western states in that we don't have a mandatory inspection program, although we do have an inspection at all public markets. But the special rangers' primary duty is criminal investigation. Those felony offenses, what we specialize in, we work with our district attorneys on a regular basis. There's been a large increase in internet crime, false identities, false payments, worked cases where false identification and entire company address was created to buy cattle out of Mississippi. They were sent to Texas, offloaded, loaded on fresh trucks, given a new identity, and sent to Kansas. They're sold for cash. We've worked lots of internet crime where people are selling or representing that they own cattle, and they're to put them on trucks, the money's wired, and the cattle never show up, and we find out the cattle didn't exist. So that is something I would urge people to be extremely cautious, unless it is a online documentable video auction or an order buyer, bonded buyer that they've dealt with before, or somebody they know extremely well as far as a breeder. Do not do business over the internet. Touch, feel, see, smell before you pay.
Yeah, and again, not to keep agreeing with Scott, but he's about right on everything he's mentioned. In Utah, we have a similar situation. Liens on livestock is one of our oldest laws in the state, allowing people who have contracts to feed other folks' livestock to be able to be paid for that. And so there's so much paperwork that goes into that. That's actually become a major portion of selling that we have to at least verify. On the other hand, because of that, there's also a lot of folks that work that deal both ways. There's people who take on feeding livestock for somebody else and just try and sell them, either ship them out of state or to sell, or try and even be brazen enough to sell them at some of our auctions here within the state, and hopefully we're catching that. But on the other hand, we've also got some folks who, and we saw this a little bit as prices dropped the last couple of years, that they got into the business thinking they're going to make a lot of money, kind of got overextended, and then started to pawn those that livestock onto someone else to feed, but then couldn't come up with the money to be able to pay that there or to pay their bills. And so they got them in a sticky situation, and we started to see a lot of kind of turnover of that livestock that wasn't necessarily legal there. We also had a recent situation, and Scott might be able to talk on it a little bit more, but there was, for lack of a better term, a Ponzi scheme where I believe the person actually was just arrested down in Texas, but he had people buying into his cattle business in California, Idaho, Colorado, and I believe, Scott, they did arrest him a couple weeks ago down in Texas.
They did. I didn't work on that case, but that is not a uncommon investigation for us, where an individual will find people with money that want into the cattle business, that want to invest and be a part of that industry, and those people by definition are con men, and they are very well spoken, very enjoyable to be around, and so they will talk those people into sending them money to invest in the cattle. They will get a return. I had one case where an individual sent money to a a buyer, an operator, and he took those funds and pretty well spent them, bought enough cattle that he could kind of take some pictures. And when it was time to deliver, he said, hey, these cattle are making a lot of money, but I've got a hot deal where I can buy three times as many. The money was sent. He turned around and paid that guy back with his own money, but kept a portion of it. And by the time it came to a head, there was a $10 million loss.
That's why we have that. We have, you know, Packers and Stockyards, part of the USDA, has their dealers and bonded livestock markets to kind of cover that things. I don't know about every state, but here in Utah, we have a secondary law with that, making sure that everybody's going to be buying and reselling or an auction, as Scott mentioned, whether it's an online auction or one of our five weekly auctions here in the state, or bonded, have enough money to cover whatever business they're doing, just to protect the producers.
Both of you have talked about across state lines, interstate deals. And obviously we know in the modern cattle business, you can put wheels under a set of calves and get them gone pretty quick. How often does that happen? How often do you have to deal with other states, other law enforcement agencies in your investigations?
Regularly. The day, because of transportation, is nearly gone, that the cattle are stolen and go 30 or 40 miles away to the sale barn or sold. That still happens on occasion, but more than often, they're going to send them a state over or to the other end of a state or across the United States and attempt to get them away from who they think is paying attention. And Cody and I have worked together for a number of years through Western States Livestock Investigator Association and International Livestock Identification Association, which Cody is president of currently, so that our agencies from across the U.S. and Western Canada talk on a regular basis, and nearly weekly we will work investigations together that are multi-state.
Yeah, again, agree with Scott there. It's, if we only talk to one person from another state once a week, that's actually a slow week. That we're expecting to get a phone call or that we're going to call either another state or even into Canada regularly based on that. As Scott mentioned, they're going to be taking these cattle as far away as they can to where they don't think they're going to be noticed. For us, they've tried to go east. Any of these larger ones, they try and go east to where these non-brand states where they don't think people are going to be looking as they come into feedlots, situations like that. We have happily gotten phone calls from places like Nebraska and Kansas checking on some things because they didn't come in with proper paperwork, which we're always glad to. And you know, Scott gave a plug to ILIA and Western States, and we're trying to get as many states on board with those associations for that type of communication, because it is needed. Like Scott said, that doesn't happen where you steal them very often and turn around within 30 or 40 miles and sell them. You're going to go away. You're going to go to another state. You're probably going to go east is usually the way that we're seeing it, because you go into those non-brand states.
Going back earlier, we were talking about identifying your livestock and things like that. Question that popped into my mind, What if you see something, actually see people loading cattle off of your place or your neighbor's place and you don't recognize them? You know, back in the old days, you'd probably just shoot them, but you probably can't do that now. So it's really a two-part question. What do you do if you see somebody, if you see cattle or equipment being stolen in progress, and then what do you do if you just see something suspicious? How can these guys help you in that way?
What we've done, as I mentioned before, we have to be very proactive in everything that we do. And eyes from wherever we can get it helps immensely. What we did, and is actually an idea we stole from Larry Hayhurst in Idaho, we give out booklets which have, we call them eyewitness statements. So if producers or anybody else is out and about and sees a truck and trailer they don't recognize, so anything from just a suspicious behavior to actually loading some things up, they actually can fill this paper out. It comes in triplicate, and they can If they feel like it, they can put that, copy that on that person's truck so they know that they've been being watched, but it gives them the witness an opportunity to bring those to us, to the local law enforcement. Anyway, so we at least have a place to start if it's happening right there and then. And in Utah, most of that's how we actually would like it to start. As you mentioned, used to be able to maybe shoot people, but because they're out and about in the locations that nobody else is around, they're not going to have a lot of help. Just get that information and get it to the local law enforcement. We don't recommend that anybody goes and confronts any of these guys. Obviously, they're going to be a situation that they're going to probably be carrying firearms, which all of our ranchers do, all of our producers do for the most part, but we don't want that situation getting out of hand. So the quicker they can get all the information they can to local law enforcement or to us, the quicker we can move on it.
What about, go ahead.
The thing we push in Texas is the exact same thing. We go at it with a crime watch mentality. We are spread thin enough, and the producers know who's in their area, who should be in their area, what vehicles, what time, who locks their gates, who leaves them open. So with that, they also have cell phones of all of these people. And so we encourage everybody to, as soon as they see something out of place, first pick up the phone and call that landowner and say, hey, do you have a new pickup? Did you leave your gate open? And then any information they can get, whether it's a partial plate, description, whatever that may be, and then send that to a law enforcement officer that they trust.
What about, you know, during the conversation, we've referred to the non-brand states, going east, you know, whatever. What would be your recommendations for the non-brand states, okay, from a cattle theft, you know, and most of the states that don't have brands, don't have brand inspectors, obviously. You know, and I guess maybe the second part of this is there, you know, should more states consider this whole idea of branding? And that's not a popular one among, you know, some of our consuming clientele, okay, you know, the consumers, because, you know, brands obviously, you know, do some hide damage, those kinds of things. So, you know, what's your recommendation on those non-brand states? Should they be thinking about it, and how might they help prevent some thefts or deter some things or help with an investigation? Any comments there or any thoughts there?
I would agree that it's a good thing to brand those cattle. And I agree that there's a percentage of those producers, because of pens or because of a mindset, may never brand. The same diligence of keeping gates locked, keeping up with your inventory, keeping your fences up, paying attention to not only your operation, but to your around, to those around it, is the most critical component. Because, you know, we have brand inspection, and Cody does as well. A thief is not going to call the brand inspector. So although it does have its place and it is a big component to our safety in the system, it in and of itself does not keep people from stealing cattle.
Yeah, again, I agree with Scott. The dishonest folks aren't going to call us anyway, but branding, and there's a couple different ways. You know, freeze branding has come a long ways, and people can do it. If I could compare it to something else, one of our biggest problems here in Utah is actually horse theft. We don't have quite the numbers of horse theft in Utah that we do with cattle, but nationwide there's about 10,000 horses stolen every year. In Utah, there's been a movement to go away from branding horses there, and we have had more problems with that than we have with cattle and really being able to return those horses, because there's no way to verify ownership, and you know they're just leaving. So if we change that back to cattle, if you don't have a way to truly identify it, there's almost no way that you can for sure get it back, at least in these states. I know it's a little bit different, and as you start to pen things and you maybe have 20, 30 head there out there. It's a little bit maybe easier to keep track of that and see exactly what's going on. But the larger herds that you have, that number one way is to, again, to brand your cattle. I would recommend that these non-brand states take a look at what goes on out west, not necessarily to adopt their policies or their laws, but to kind of help out. As I mentioned, we've gotten some phone calls from Eastern Nebraska, checking on things which is not part of the brand state. We've got them from Kansas, some other states that don't necessarily have brand inspectors or a brand state, but they know what the laws are out this way and are willing to help, and because they don't want that on them. They don't want to be the place where stolen cattle go to. They want to make sure everything's on the up and up, and we appreciate that. So again, as could they go back to working together with other states, it doesn't matter if it's you know, Florida or New York or anywhere from there over this way. We're happy to work with them on any of their cases and hope that they're happy to work with us. And knowing what goes on there is always a helpful situation.
So what other types of fraud are common in your work? Do you work with only livestock, or do you investigate, you know, fraud investment deals or bad bank accounts? You know, are there other components of what you guys do, or is it pretty much isolated and specific to the livestock side?
In Texas, any agriculture-related crime, we will investigate, including all types of property from tractors, trailers, saddles, weapons out of farm and ranch houses. But on the livestock side, it's a full gamut from cutting a lock and stealing one calf or a little jagged calves out of a set of pens, to herds of cows, to thefts out of feedlots, to false identity, ID fraud, as far as purchasing something and trying to bill it to another person, a lot of hindering a secured creditor and bank frauds, kiting schemes, just a full array of different financial crimes dealing with agriculture and particularly livestock.
And here in Utah, mostly what we're dealing with is the ownership of the livestock, although as there starts to be some fraud or some banking things that go on, that whatever is tied to that ownership that we may be involved in. Again, we have some folks trying to buy for others where our dealer laws come into effect, but we don't necessarily have the full gambit as Scott does with everything. We're just dealing with livestock and the ownership of those animals, but it does tend to creep into it. And really, the way that things have started to work throughout the United States, I think, and Utah might be a little bit slower than some other states, is that the agriculture community has gone away from, it's just not as big as it used to be. And so we actually have folks going into law enforcement that don't really have the background in agriculture. And so we have actually now kind of become the experts in that field. And so we're getting asked to help out in all different realms of agriculture anymore because of that, because we are still the folks that have to do with it on a daily basis. And they're a little bit more in the know than what's going on with our regular law enforcement anymore.
Gentlemen, this has really been an enlightening discussion. Is there anything else you can think of that maybe we haven't touched on, but that might be important for producers, at least the honest ones, to know about?
From our perspective in the Texas area, many of these states, as far as Texas, our Special Ranger Force is supported by membership or by Texas and Southwestern Cattle Ranger Association. Many of these states are brand boards. And so the support of those local brand boards, brand inspectors, or livestock producer associations that support those investigators or inspectors is a critical component. We have to have the support and the eyes and ears of the community to be effective.
Yeah, then just to go a little bit further, I think that we're starting to see a little bit of a struggle in the majority of the brand states, especially the brand inspection programs there. It's starting to be looked at as not necessarily as important as it used to be, especially with the cost of it and the thoughts on government in some places. But in places like Wyoming, which is struggling right now, and some other states with budgets, they're starting to see how important it really is. Talking to our counterparts in Wyoming over the past couple of weeks, they're having struggles with their budget, and so they're actually starting to see some layoffs, what is now turned over into having a large amount of felony thefts and a lot of cases that they're working with. They're undermanned. It's truly an important thing, and as we mentioned before, it's usually the honest folks that are calling us, but in a situation with Scott and the Special Rangers, along with our proactive approach, we're out there trying to see these things and catch them before they happen, if we can keep our livestock theft numbers down like we've done over the past couple of years here in Utah, that money coming back to those producers pays for itself. And to get those folks behind us is probably our number one priority, which we think we've done a good job. These programs kind of speak for themselves. But we also, like I said, need all the eyes we can to do it. So that's why we are, again, doing the proactive approach. We're happy to help anywhere we can. And really willing to go talk to anybody to make sure that they understand what we're doing. And it usually doesn't take long to get those folks behind us.
I would agree 100%. The effective agricultural investigators that these programs have across particularly the Western United States, it's very evident to me, being located in the center of the United States where we have property travel both directions. Going west, where I have those designated agricultural investigators with statewide authority, it is much more effective communications getting information and getting evidence in the western half of the United States. Don't mean to demean the law enforcement investigators to the east, but those states have not put as a priority to have agricultural-based investigators that's their sole purpose. So, and just in the last 4 or 5 days, I've talked to South Dakota, Wyoming, Oregon, Idaho, and California on investigations. And I was able to call somebody such as Cody that I knew specifically and could get an answer immediately.
Okay. Very good. Gentlemen, thank you. Very much appreciate your time and your expertise. And that about wraps us up for this edition of Beef Roundtable. All of us here with the Beef Roundtable, with Beef Magazine, Purdue University, hope that your new year will be prosperous and safe. Cody, Scott, thanks again. Really appreciate you guys, your thoughts, your expertise, and mostly, we appreciate you, your boots on the ground, protecting agricultural livestock producers mainly.
Thank you.
Theft.
Please join us again next month when our Beef Roundtable discussion topic will be another great experience. Until next time, Bert and I hope you have a safe and rewarding month.